biggest stories in our country is the illegal migrants that are being bused, flown, cabbed throughout the country into other markets like Florida, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Illinois, California, really all over the country. This is being done in the middle of the night. It's being done in very secretive areas. It appears to be an abuse of power from the Biden administration. It is an illegal immigration policy program gone rogue, you might say. We'll talk about all of that today with the Center for Immigration Studies. Andrew Arthur will join us there. And then the conflict on Russia and Ukraine. Russia, Vladimir Putin, does not want NATO at his border, and he's going to defend, he says, and it looks like an invasion may be imminent. We'll dive into that with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as well as an interesting piece in Time magazine with the headline, Trump could still lead the U.S. to civil war, even if he doesn't run in 2024. It's a lot behind that story. And another fascinating story coming out of Arizona. Tom Crosby, Cochise County, Arizona Board of Supervisors, will be with us on these intergovernmental agency agreements, these IGAs, and a potential COVID overreach and a pay-to-play. All that's coming up next on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. If you're reading the New York Post or you're watching Fox News, you may know this story. If you're not doing either of those, you probably have no concept of what I'm going to talk about next, which is that the Biden administration is flying and busing and cabbing and doing all kinds of means to distribute people throughout the country. We'll take that up next here. Let's welcome on here Andrew Arthur, goes by Art. He's a former immigration judge and now the resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. And again, you know, CIS is a Washington, D.C. based research institute that examines the impact of immigration on our country. We often have Mark Gregorian on, the director there as well. Art, it is terrific. It's been a while since we have caught up here, and it's a privilege to have you on the program today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today. There's a lot going on. We got a lot to talk about.
I guess it shouldn't shock us anymore, Art, but it still does, actually, that there's no media coverage at all. The only ones that's covering this story, and it's a big one, this is a huge story, is the New York Post and Fox News are the only ones that are covering it. So what's happening is, as the Post reports, Biden encourages massive illegal immigration and tries to hide it with secret flights. That was the headline from the Post. And they go on to say, Art, the Biden administration doesn't want media attention on, well, they're not getting it either, on illegal immigration. It's open border policies or the results of those policies. How do we know? A security officer just said so in an explosive video of secretive dark of night flights transporting illegal immigrants to various points throughout the U.S. And these are places all over the place. I mean, Florida, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Illinois, everywhere. I mean, all kinds of states. And we don't even know how many states they're going to because, again, these are all secret flights. What do you think about, what do you know about this? And what do you think about this policy?
There are actually two parts of this, Malcolm. The first one is, you know, who these people are and what authority the Biden administration is moving them around the United States. By law, every illegal migrant that crosses the border is supposed to be detained, not just detained when they're arrested, detained when they're processed, detained if they go to immigration court, and detained until they're granted asylum. If they're never granted asylum, they're supposed to be removed from the United States, but detention is the rule throughout that entire process. That hasn't been the rule of late, but the Biden administration hasn't been very straightforward about what it's doing. It was only in the course of a lawsuit down in Texas, Texas versus Biden, that we found out the Biden administration had released 55,000 plus illegal migrants to the Southwest border just in the month of December. This is astounding. There is no authority in the law for them to do this. In fact, it's contrary to the direct mandates in the law, and yet they're doing it. So again, who these people are, on what authority they're being flown, those are all problems. But the bigger problem is the one that you just touched on. And that is, we don't, you know, there is no transparency from the Biden administration about any of this. It appears that they're simply breaking the law with impunity in transferring migrants all around the United States. And they know that. That's why they're doing it in the dead of night. But the fact that they know that they're breaking the law is the reason why they're not saying anything about it. They're going to get even more lawsuits if this policy becomes public. Now, I don't think that they're going to be able to hide it from the New York Post or Fox News or the listeners of Malcolm Out Loud. But, you know, they are able to keep it out of many media outlets. You don't see it in the New York Times. You don't see it in the Washington Post. You don't even see it in the Wall Street Journal, which is a sister publication in the New York Post as part of News Corp. So, you know, this is going to be an issue in the election. And the less they say about it, the more people are going to start to wonder what's going on. But again, only if the media reports it.
Why do you think the Wall Street Journal is in? Any idea why they don't have anything on this?
I don't. And again, it doesn't make any sense. Now, the Wall Street Journal editorial page traditionally has been in favor of higher levels of migration. In fact, I think that they used to run an annual column that said something like there should be a new amendment to the Constitution, that there shall be no restrictions on immigration, because, of course, unlimited immigration is good for business, and business is the consumer of the Wall Street Journal. Now, it's become more of a mainstream operation. It competes directly with the Washington Post and the New York Times. It's where I get most of my news from. And they do occasionally have articles on immigration in there. But, you know, the people who are hurt the most by unlimited immigration, Malcolm, aren't you and me. You know, nobody's coming to the United States illegally so they can become a pundit in a DC think tank, although that would be interesting. Right. But, you know, the bigger issue is that they are competing directly for jobs with the least advantaged Americans, you know, inner city youth, people who haven't received good jobs, members of minority groups that have been traditionally shut out of the labor market. They're now starting to make inroads, but those inroads aren't going to go very far if they have to compete directly with an unlimited supply of cheap labor.
I've been talking about this, and we've been talking about this as long as we can remember, through multiple administrations, by the way, the fact that Congress has never put together a comprehensive immigration package, and we've been fighting about it for a long time. Now, the Biden administration comes along, they reverse all the Trump policies, okay, got it, for whatever reason, in every category, not just immigration, but everything. So they put their talking points out, Jen Psaki in the White House said, all right, this is just, we're just worried about the children. They use the children as some sort of a talking point, like that's the real humanitarian crisis here. And of course, it was the kids in cages and all of that through the Trump era that the media tried to expose, which of course was done in the Obama administration. Follow the bouncing ball here, everybody. The challenge now is the Biden administration says, well, we're just worried about women and children. So we just want to, you know, give them a new life, what have you. But, you know, the guys will send back. Now the videos and the pictures show they're all young men that are being circulated throughout the entire country. No matter who you're circulating are, correct me on this. I mean, it's all illegal. And the fact that we don't have a comprehensive immigration policy program. But yet Biden administration is in such denial of the truth. I guess what I'm trying to get at is the underlying motive here. There's a root cause here. I don't believe this is about women and children. It's actually been proven now with what we're talking about right now, Art. So what is this really about?
Yeah, I mean, you touch on a number of very important points there. Let me just note some of the pictures that we've seen lately. Reporting by Bill Malugin at Fox News from Harlingen, Texas, has shown pictures of single adult males being released from unmarked, nondescript buildings. Some of them are getting in cabs and flying to the airport in Harlingen. Some of them are getting on buses and, you know, being bused all around the United States. Malugin's reporting actually indicates that many of those people, some of those people at least, have criminal convictions in the United States already. They're frequent flyers. This isn't their first trip to this country. Crimes like, you know, driving under the influence, assault, possession of narcotics, you know, illegal reentry. Illegal reentry is a felony. You get 2 years for that in federal prison. So these are very serious crimes, and yet the Biden administration is ignoring those crimes and allowing those individuals in the United States. On what authority are they doing that? We have no idea, and they're not telling anyone. They did confirm with Malugin, or they didn't deny to Malugin that some of these people had criminal records, and yet there's no information coming out about how they got in. So that's the first thing, just to lay the groundwork. The second thing is, you mentioned comprehensive immigration reform. And, you know, everybody thinks that the immigration system should be reformed. But when Democrats talk about a comprehensive immigration reform, usually what they mean is amnesty. And the Biden administration has put forward a number of different amnesty plans. In fact, they've tried to put them into the Build Back Better bill, the reconciliation bill that can pass both bodies of Congress without any Republican votes. Now, they've been stymied in that effort by the House parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, a woman who actually does know a good deal about immigration. So, you know, they've been unable to push that. But the interesting thing is that Biden's comprehensive immigration reform, unlike earlier versions of this, doesn't have any enforcement in it at all. There's, you know, no more money for ICE, no new authorities, no new grounds of removal, nothing that's going to make it easier for Border Patrol agents in the dead of night in the Sonoran Desert to do their jobs, nothing that's going to make it easier for ICE officers on the streets of Detroit to get rapists off the street. But if you remember in the early days of this administration, in fact, up until I believe last week, Biden administration officials have been talking about how the Trump administration broke the immigration system. And, you know, it didn't make any sense to me when they said that because they never gave any examples of it. And yet you see that reported again and again in major media outlets, you know, about how the Trump administration broke the immigration system. There's a concept in psychology called projection. That's where, you know, I have certain flaws in myself and I'm going to say you have those flaws so that I'm not the one to blame. And that's really what's going on here with the Biden administration. They are projecting a broken immigration system on the Trump administration because they are, before our very eyes and before the video of Fox News, breaking the immigration system. And so, this is a deliberate act by the Biden administration. They want to break it so that they can then rebuild it in their own image.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the picture of complete open borders and total chaos. Congressman Michael McCaul comes out. He says, he says, it has been going on for quite some time since the beginning of this administration. Well, clearly, as you just said, a lot of these policies started from day one, Art. McCaul goes on to say they just got caught on a video in the middle of the night. Well, it's a series of videos, actually. They've been telling us all along these are minors being transported. So, see, what they do is they try to qualify the lie then. This is what gets me now. Now McCaul goes on to say these are young adult males, many with criminal histories, which is very clear here, being released into the streets. Worse than that, the taxpayer is paying for, like, a travel service. You know, he says enough is enough. Well, actually, let's talk about when is enough enough, Art. You know, I think all the time about the politicizing of every policy we have in our country. Immigration certainly is at the top of that list. And then you have to really understand and peel the onion to say, what's the root reason or the cause here that these two political ideologies can't come together and come up with an answer that is satisfactory to the American people who hired them? We, the people who hire these clowns to represent us, why can't they just come and solve this problem? But Art, there is no solving the problem when there's nothing but trickery going on. Why would any administration, let me ask you this question, why, and this is tough, why would any Republican or Democrat or independent, whatever, why would any president of the United States, why would any administration and proper people, we the people kind of people, why would they want to put these criminals throughout our country? Why would they be doing it in, as you said, the middle of the night or whenever? Why are these policies so busted and broken? What's the root? What's the motive here? Why would they do it? And what's the real motive here, please?
And, you know, that really is the great question. There are a couple of different ways to look at this. There's, you know, one that I discount that you hear very popularly, where they simply want to flood the United States with foreign nationals. I don't necessarily think that that's really true. And I don't subscribe to that at all. But I think that the bigger issue that we have, and I think the reason why they're doing this, is that the Biden administration is broken up into two different camps. One of those camps is the Ron Klain, Susan Rice camp, and they are traditionalists. They know what it takes to win elections and, you know, the things that you do that will lose elections. And reporting, including from the Wall Street Journal in this instance, indicates that, you know, they are pushing for a deterrence-based strategy, that traditional strategy that we've had ever since we first had immigration laws in this country. Unfortunately, up against those and on the winning side right now are a group of immigrant advocates, many of whom were key players in the Biden campaign, and they have distaste for the immigration laws of the United States. They just don't think they're fair. And let me quote the words of Barbara Jordan, civil rights icon, who was President Clinton's chairman of his Commission on Immigration Reform. And what she said, and again, I'm going to paraphrase here, that if you have unlimited immigration, the American people are going to lose faith in immigration and they're going to turn their backs on it. And I think that's really the thing that, you know, these immigrant advocates, you know, what I call the No Borders Bloc in the White House is missing. They think that they can, you know, break the system, make this the new normal, and that everybody's simply going to have to take it.
A lot of people think this is not a something that they need to worry about, that it's not going to impact their lives. People have a tendency to turn the channel real quick, metaphorically, if it's not something of great concern to them. And let's face it, Art, people are really saddled right now with a lot of challenges in our country, both economically and healthcare wise and COVID stuff and everything else. I mean, there are plenty of problems on their plate at the kitchen table. So they tend to ignore this kind of thing until it shows up at your doorstep. And there's a bigger problem, I find. And so I think about that, number one, over there. And lastly, Art, then, so I'm thinking here right now, the policies, as I say, have totally reversed with the Biden administration. Now, these policies are clearly not very American. They're not impacted. They're not helpful to any American, actually. They're very anti-American. America is a great country of diversity, built on great immigration, but for the right reasons. Executive fiat, the way we run these things, executive orders that they continue to sign off, and these temporary policies and the tit-tat game that goes back and forth between these two political ideologies. I'm thinking comprehensive immigration reform. In order to get that, you really have got to have a mandate in Washington. You're not going to be able to get that by with 52 senators or that sort of a thing. You need to have a complete mandate. So my message or question back to you, Art, the last point here is, in order to really get what I call fix the system and get rid of the cages, get rid of the problems, just fix it. And let's be a home of paradise that does welcome people for the right reasons. In order to get to that point, if that ever happens in our lifetime, Art, you and I right now, that's going to take some sort of a mandate coming out of Washington, D.C. that's real serious about this this major, major point of America, which I think this really beats to the heart of our country. What do you say to that?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I've lived through prior immigration reforms. I was a staffer through prior immigration reforms on Capitol Hill. And I think that the next election will deliver a mandate. But the more important thing to keep in mind is I think that there are a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill, a lot of Democratic senators who don't necessarily agree with what's going on. Now, you see Representative Cuellar down in Texas, who has pushed back on the Biden administration on a lot of these policies because he sees how it affects his community. Laredo is in his district. And I think that there are a lot of other Democrat and Republican representatives. Now, again, when you get a brand new Congress, and especially if it changes control, it's going to come in with a lot of new ideas. Now, if there's rancor, you're not going to get anything done, but Republicans will still control the pocketbook. But if there's any kind of good feelings or an idea that we need to go into a different direction, you actually will see substantive reforms that are going to benefit both immigrants and benefit the
world. So, Art, if I hear you correctly, then, and real quickly here, but if I hear you correctly, then, in an odd sort of way, this may not sound right, but this could all be a very big silver lining. In other words, I often tell our listeners, our people, that sometimes we've got to, you know, got to get that punch, gut in the punch there to the gut that wakes us up. And maybe some of the egregious things that are happening right now, and the lack of, you know, well, the lack of civility between the two parties, but the lack of policies and the lack of transparency with all of the secrecy, could be enough to create that overriding mandate, what I call not a red wave or a blue wave, but an American wave. That's what I'm waiting for, Art, is an American wave for people to stand up on both sides of that aisle and say enough. Well, what McCall said, enough is enough. What do you say to that last thought?
I agree with Jefferson. I'm going to paraphrase him because he can't be as eloquent as him. When the American people know all the facts, they never make a mistake. The facts are coming out. And I think you're absolutely right. It will be the silver lining of all of this. Mm. We're actually going to get to a sensible immigration system. We all need to work toward that.
Mm, perfectly said. Art, thank you for joining me on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Thank you for having me.
Check out CIS.org. Wow. Well, up next, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us, and got a lot to talk about with Russia and Ukraine, what's happening there, and then a very interesting piece in Time magazine, which I find is quite startling. Sometimes you get these little gems in the media. This is one here. Let me just give you the headline quick. Trump could still lead the U.S. to civil war. Well, even if he doesn't run in 2024, you just love those headlines, don't you know? Well, stay right there, my fellow Americans. We'll rejoin you on the other side here. You're listening to Viewpoint this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Had they taken the poll in Philadelphia in 1776, they would have scrapped the whole idea of independence. A third of the country was for it, a third of the country was against it, and the remaining third, well, in the old human way, was waiting to see who came out on top. Those are the words of David McCullough. Join us back at AmericaOutloud.com and find out which of today's politicians are in which third. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all. Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly, and thank you as always, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission. One of the biggest conflicts we have now on the horizon is Russia and Ukraine. You know, it's remarkable if the world hasn't had enough drama with COVID and the pandemic and lockdowns and people crisis fear. Now we've got this battle with Russia going on. I want to do a little bit of a dive into this with you all, and then a very interesting time piece I want to talk about as well. Let's bring on Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is here. It is always a privilege of mine to have Colonel Tony Schaefer with us. He's the president of the London Center for Policy Research and a CIA trained intelligence operation officer, 35 years of experience in global and national security. Tony's one of those guys who I love. I told him the other day in text, he can talk about, you know, geopolitical matters and foreign affairs policy, and but also talk about domestic politics. So it's always a joy to have you, Tony. Welcome to Viewpoint this Sunday, brother.
Malcolm, look, at the mutual. Thank you for having me. I always enjoy our conversations because you ask great questions, and I appreciate the fact that you allow the discussion of fact, which facts apparently are controversial these days. So thanks for having me.
You know firsthand, you're being thrown off social media. That's a good sign you're doing work, buddy, huh?
Right.
Let's talk about this. Russian President Vladimir Putin now at a news conference just this past month here. He said here, you promised us in the 1990s that NATO would not move an inch to the east. You cheated us shamelessly. Now, this is Putin talking about that.
Right.
The U.S. says a ban on expansion was never on the table, but Russia insists it was. And now Putin is demanding a permanent ban on Ukraine from joining the pact or else. All right, let's talk about where we're at this moment, Colonel Schaefer, is the or else, and is that the sticking point, the NATO piece of this with Ukraine, or is there something else we're missing?
No, I think there's always something else with Putin, but Putin is fundamentally correct in his view. And what this all comes from, Malcolm, is this very loose, not even treaty, but something people refer back to all the time, which is got the Ukrainians to give up their nuclear weapons. And this is the crux of why this is all happening. Back in 1994, there was a series of negotiations which were ongoing relating to the fact that a number of countries wanted to have assurances of two things. First, that nuclear weapons not go loose. We obviously were very concerned at the end of the Cold War that all these smaller, not quite tactical nukes, but they're not big enough to put on an airplane. These things were in Ukraine, lots of them. I mean, they were on their own, the third largest nuclear power on Earth.
Yeah.
So something called the Budapest Memorandum on Security Assurances was created. And talk about a document that is open to interpretation. This thing did not have the weight of a treaty. It did not have the weight of any legal binding issue. It's just something everybody agreed to. It's like, hey, we all agree. So Putin's interpretation is, oh, well, you know, part of the agreement is NATO would never expand. That may or may not have been said. I don't know. I've talked to my friend Jim Woolsey, former director of CIA, friend and mentor, one of our members. I did not ask him that question, but he was involved in those talks back then. And so then you go fast forward to today, it's in the eye of the beholder. So the other thing that I fault Tony Blinken on, Malcolm, and all the other folks who are dealing with this, is a fundamental lack of comprehension that the Russians, since Tsar Alexander III, have been paranoid. They're paranoid, and they want this zone of security around Russia. It's something that goes back generations. And so to ignore that fact, ignore Putin's desire to reestablish the Soviet Union, fundamentally allows for him to continue to do it. So don't take my words as thinking that we should have been more involved in stopping him. I'm simply stating these are the things, the signposts along the way, Malcolm, that the people in charge have ignored, to include the Trump folks. Both sides ignored this. So here we are today. Putin has been making it very clear that he wants to reestablish the security zone. He's been acting in this regard. So no matter if you agree with him or don't agree with him, he's not been shy about this. This has been going on. And for the Biden administration now to all of a sudden say, oh, no, we got to do something. We got to deploy troops. We got to send in our weapons. Mm-hmm. Malcolm, it's a year too late. Right. Any serious deterrence, the first rule of deterrence is having credibility. None of this is credible. Right. So as much as you see all the smoke, there's nothing behind it. 8,500 troops on standby, who are, by the way, light infantry, they ain't going to do anything against tens of thousands of Soviet armored brigades. Mm-hmm. It's a sham. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you're sending all of these Javelin anti-tank missiles over 2 weeks before the war starts. Malcolm, you and I both know how modern logistics works. Mm-hmm. These things are going to be stuck in a warehouse for a week before they can get out anywhere. Plus, there's the training, there's the refresher. They aren't a practical weapon to be used against the Russians. So all of this is simply Joe Biden working to distract by the failure of his policy, and further to distract from his fundamental failures across the board in domestic politics.
You think he's going in there?
I think Putin's going in. I think Putin is going to either take most, if not all. And I think Biden knows it. I think Biden is kind of making a good show to say, oh, my goodness, we gave it the old college try and couldn't stop it.
Now you mentioned 2 weeks. Is it some knowledge that it is a couple of weeks off, you think?
Or? So the fundamental military objective that I think they've established for themselves requires the use of armor. Armor is not well suited to soft ground. So the experts I look to advise me basically say towards February 14th, towards Valentine's Day, is when the ground's going to be sufficiently frozen for the effective employment of armor, of tanks. So I'm looking towards mid-February, towards when you're going to see the conflict really begin. So
interesting. Even though Russia still denies any intent to that, which doesn't mirror their actions clearly. With the amount of soldiers there, that wouldn't just be a futile exercise with that kind of investment that they just put on the border there. Well, Ukraine knows it's coming, right? I mean, they know it's coming.
I think so. Well, the other aspect of this is if you look at the geography of the region. There's been a number of exercises the Russians have run with countries in the region. And it's always interesting when they show up to do an exercise and they leave their gear. It's like, oh, yeah, we're just here for an exercise. And then they leave it. And they did that a year ago where, you know, some of the countries around Ukraine that they're allied with, they went ahead and they left their gear. It's like, that's a hint. Again, Malcolm, we knew this was going to happen. This is something that goes back to not only Putin's own statements, where he has said one of the greatest tragedies of the 20th century was the fall of the Soviet Union. That's what he said.
Yeah.
To his current belief and restatement that, hey, we feel threatened by NATO. He's not been shy about this.
Let me ask you this. Your gut feeling now, you've spelled out perfectly the setup right now for NATO. Do you think there's a lot of indication, or people are saying Putin's looking for this, looking to reform the Soviet Union, all of this? Okay, put that aside. We got NATO trying to come in on their border. They don't like it. Do you think this is a one-off, or is he looking to, real question now, or is he recreating, looking to have more dominant, go after other countries? Because I'm not getting that feeling that's the case, but talk to me.
So his desire, Putin's desire, is to reestablish what he believes to be the traditional boundaries, not necessarily borders, but boundaries, areas of influence of the old Russia Republic.
Going even back including to Poland and places like that, you think?
Well, Poland was not traditionally part of the Russian Empire, but they were a buffer state. So in my judgment, I think he wants buffer states. That is to say, and this is where there's an opportunity.
Wow.
My belief is, hey, let's accept the fact they're paranoid and deal with that. It's like, dude, we'll help you. Let's figure out a way that we can work together on issues of interest. Matter of fact, I recommended, and I'm doing an editorial on this, where I talk about the fact that when Trump came into office, we recommended, my think tank through Mike Flynn and others, let's reinvent NATO. Let's actually take NATO and make it something that people can use for the 21st century, focus on cyber, counterterrorism, and energy, and figure out a way that we can cooperate. Imagine that, cooperating with Putin and Russia so that people can figure out a way to coexist. To me, there is a peaceful solution here. But Malcolm, there's no money in the peace.
Right,
everybody's wanted this antagonism for their own reason.
You're thinking between Russia and America. And I want to talk to you about that point right now, please, because you bring it up perfectly where my thinking is, Tony. So this is what I'm understanding now. So during the Obama era, the Crimea was taken. That was an aha moment when they that was the gem out there in the Black Sea. They grabbed that, right? Okay.
Right.
And we did nothing. And of course, the whole thing was set up for failure. I get it. Now we have another Democrat administration, not being a funny guy here, but now you've got his cohort, Joe Biden. And the same thing's going to happen, except you're probably right. They'll probably take about all of Ukraine now. There's a lot of controversy on that. A lot of Ukrainians, there's a Russia background there. A lot of them think they're still part of Mother Russia. You've got others who don't want any part of it. It's going to create a lot of internal conflict there. So there's a lot of questions. Are they successful with incorporating that into the Russia lifestyle? They'll put a puppet in there and all that stuff, obviously. But now you've got that going on. And then you just point out, does it go further with the Soviet Union? Here's the thing I would say, Tony, I really believe. I think the reason we're revisiting this right now, all the work that Ronald Reagan did, Margaret Thatcher, Mikhail Gorbachev, is now being blown in a hot second. This is my opinion now. And I'm saying that, Tony, because what's happening is we could have been in a lot better position with Russia. In fact, I've said oftentimes to listeners, we have a lot more in common with Russia had we brought them to the table. And
right.
we've worked with them historically before, Tony. Talk to me if I'm wrong or right. But here's the thing. We could have done something with them. China is the one we got to be concerned with. Now we've blown
exactly.
it up. Another adversary enemy who's going to work with China, who they don't like, to screw America in the West. I mean, why did our political class screw this one up so badly?
Because they wanted to. This is not by accident. Again, Malcolm, they have been charting this. Mm-hmm. And it's like Ned Price, this current State Department spokesman, to your point.
Yeah.
He was asked recently, why is Ukraine going to be different than Crimea? You know, the same team's in charge. And Ned Price said, oh, well, it's going to be different this time. It's not going to be different this time. The people in charge, and by the way, this is why they hated Trump. Trump saw through this nonsense. Like, right. Hey, this stuff is going to result in war. No, sit down, Mr. President. You don't understand. You don't have a big brain like us. Mm-hmm. That's why he was calling him out on stuff like this.
Right.
It's like what the Biden administration said, what the Obama administration said does not match their actions. The actions are completely opposite.
Right.
So I'm with you. A logical, rational person would have sat back and said, hey, the Russians share a lot of the same interests we do. Why don't we find a way to cooperate?
Amen.
Why don't we find a way to de-escalate the tension and find a way to coexist?
Before it ever even happened, you know?
Yeah, because there is a real enemy. That real enemy is China, and it's going to do things to upend everything. And I think the Russians, if you talk to them, would probably understand why they need to work with us instead of the Chinese.
Tony, in the long picture, is it just, I mean, really, really now, is it just too late period? We totally blew it, or is there any, I mean, beyond Ukraine even, is there any merit or hope to, I don't even why I asked the question, but to form some sort of rapport with Russia, or is it just a lost cause?
Well, no, I don't think it's too late. I think it's just, and as long as you have someone like Biden in charge,
right.
you're going to see this antagonism and chaos.
Right, right.
Biden, right. These guys, Tony Blinken is as dim as he appears. He really is that dim.
For sure.
Lloyd Austin, I know I've worked for General Austin. General Austin is not the best choice to be Secretary of Defense. I'll leave it at that. What I'm saying is you have put people in charge who have no clue on how to be successful. They have been measured over and over. I had this discussion with one of my colleagues yesterday. Mm. These people were brought up in a system where measures of performance mm-hmm. were measured, not measures of effectiveness. You didn't have to be effective. You just had to basically do and say things a certain way and be convincing to get promoted. That's how these people got there. They didn't have to succeed.
Right.
And that's why the measure of success does not exist within the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. Think about this, Malcolm. The complete debacle of Afghanistan, and yet all the same clowns are in charge.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing minutes ago, Tony. I was going to bring it up with you, but you just said it right there. All right, I need to get to this other story, but you know what we'll do? I'm very anxious. This was a great talk with you on this Russia thing. I'm anxious to look at this back a few weeks from now and see what happened and the predicaments on this thing. I'm very curious to replay this with you and I.
Sure.
And then, and then see what happened. And then the larger forecast, because this was a very intriguing conversation with you. All right, I want to do this other story quick. And this, you know, I don't pay a lot of attention to the media, but we still have to see what they're doing. We got to pay attention. And I seen this one in Time. And Time sometimes has some very interesting and provocative pieces that tell you something. This one says Trump could still lead the U.S. to civil war, even if he doesn't run in 2024. What's the headline on it? I said, oh, God, what are they doing here now? And there are a couple of interesting points here I'd like your opinion on. Our country has become increasingly divided, you think, with race now playing a central role in debates over police and immigration, healthcare. Well, because they made racism the order of the day, which is sick on its face, is very un-American, but they've made it part of the fabric of what we're talking about. They talk about instead of embracing our differences, Tony, we're arguing and at each other's face. And so it talks about those who divide, this piece here. For a society to fracture along identity lines, you need mouthpieces, influential people who are willing to make discriminatory appeals and pursue discriminatory policies in the name of a particular group. And of course, who do they point out? But Donald Trump, naturally. The biggest ethnic, they call it an ethnic entrepreneur, Tony, if you follow me, okay? And the biggest one they say is Donald Trump. And in his bid for power, he realized that appeals to identity could galvanize his political base. In other words, Black America, Hispanic America, Mexicans, the line, the, you know, whatever, you know, the comment, African countries, Muslim countries, all of this. They made him into a racist bigot, you know, that sort of thing. So they're saying that he is this next piece, this ethnic entrepreneur, and likely to create a civil war in our country. And if not, and I'm going to let you go on this, he said, and listen to this, all signs indicate that Trump is likely to be the Republican candidate again in 2024. But even if he isn't, other ambitious Republicans, Tom Cotton, Ron DeSantis, Josh Hawley, have studied his playbook and will no doubt use it as a catapult themselves into the White House. They will try to attract Trump's 88 million followers. They will seek to gain additional ones and whatever, et cetera, et cetera. What do you make of this sort of thinking?
So, Malcolm, unfortunately, we are on a path to civil war unless there is rationality brought to the other side. And I'm not trying to pass blame. I'm just trying to say that from my observations, and I've spoken to folks, I know this may surprise you, I actually have friends who are traditional liberals.
I do too, Tony.
I spoke to one this past Sunday. He was a former member of Congress.
Yeah.
You can probably guess who it is. And she was telling me about some of her own concerns that relate to her side by the fact that there's a war on objective truth. This is not about politics. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's about left or right. This is about the fact that elements of the left who are the most vocal have been able to take over that political side and are using it for purposes of undermining the very fabric of the system of governance, the republic that we all subscribe to. So I think it's not really about liberals or Republicans. It's about Stalinists who really are pushing to end the system. And I know Ron Klain, the chief of staff of the White House under Biden, gets all this blame. It's like, I don't think it's him. I think it's the larger Democrat system, Democrat Party, that's just turned to totalitarianism for purposes of justifying its actions. And I think if the Democrat Party, that's the current party led by these extreme Stalinists, continue, they will create conditions because most of America is not ready to be communist. And the more you push that, the more I think you increase the odds of happening. Trump is just the excuse. The left sees him as the boogeyman. They want to use him as the justification for their own continued bad behavior. That's all that is at this point. I think chances are pretty good that Trump's going to run. But I do believe the left's going to go nuts again, because I think the independents have seen how bad it is under a regime, the Biden regime. And Malcolm, I don't think what they're doing is by random. I don't think they're incompetent. I think they know what they're doing, and that's what makes it worse.
Let me ask you this. If Trump did rerun, do you think, and I don't know the answer to this, I mean, but just real simple, we always say we are who we are. Do you think he comes back as Trump 2.0 or no?
I think Trump's learned some lessons.
That's what I'm asking,
I'd like to believe he has. I've been critical, as you know, even on your show about
you
some
have.
Of the things
you
he's
have.
Done. Yeah. And I will continue to be critical. I mean, I to be an advisor, you got to be honest. And so, no, I think they've made some great mistakes regarding foreign policy and domestic policy. With that said, I'd like to believe they've learned their lessons. And of course, if they ask a lot of us back who were critical of them, I guess that would be a good sign that, hey, they've learned and want to do better. So we'll see. But I'd like to believe they have less learned, and I think they would do better next time.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you.
Well, thank you, Malcolm. Always great to join you.
I want to turn our attention to something different right now that, you know, it feeds into a lot of the things I talk to you about routinely about what our world is going through in our country. You have to remember how COVID had changed the landscape for many. And it has highlighted problems. It has given power to people who shouldn't have it. I think we all understand that with these mandates, lockdowns, and other things that are happening. Surely we cover it enough with all our expertise on America Out Loud. I'd like you to meet a gentleman now with a very interesting situation that's happening out of Arizona. And please welcome to the program here, Tom Crosby joins me. And Tom is the Arizona Board of Supervisors in Cochise County, Arizona. He also, by the way, has a strong background as a Border Patrol, spent 26 years there, long history, long profession there with that. So you surely know the lay of the land. Tom, welcome to Viewpoint this Sunday.
Thank you very much, Malcolm.
Because I understand the timeline, and I want to give you the floor to tell folks what we're dealing with here. There's a lot of stories from this era where you almost have to always connect the dots. This is one of those stories today. Let's try to do that now for listeners. Back in August 21, what you had found out is these intergovernmental agency agreements, IGAs they're called. And this is in your area of Cochise County there in Arizona that you discovered. And I think you were concerned. Tell us why you were concerned with these documents and how this thing started off, Tom, if you would please.
Well, there's going to be a myriad of types of intergovernmental agreements. And I became kind of wary of intergovernmental agreements when I was on the city council. And the intergovernmental agreement between the city and the county to run elections, for instance. And when I saw election discrepancies back in 2012 and tried to pursue that, one of the things that intergovernmental agreements do is they have mutual get out of jail clauses in them, and I can't think of what that's called exactly, but hold harmless agreement. So one of the things that you have anytime you have a intergovernmental agreement is mutual hold harmless agreements, and in my opinion that endangers Joe Citizen from being able to take action against either entity that might actually be at fault. But prior to August 10th, which is probably the most strong example that I have of an intergovernmental agreement, there was a $352,000 grant with a company called Rapid Trace. And I'm going to just talk a little bit about that contract with the county. It says, close contacts must also be removed from the population via self-quarantine. Now, just that language, must, is imperative, whereas self implies free will in order to quarantine yourself or not. So besides that, contact tracing comes from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And anybody who wants to work for this contact tracing company called Rapid Trace is going to be taught strong elicitation skills. They will communicate primarily with the infected person's contacts. So you may recall when we were in the height of, the most people believed in the whole COVID narrative, which I don't think they do now, many churches were closed. So I thought that if nothing else, this was a threat to churches having this contact tracing and the threat of the government coming in and taking action and gathering information.
I love the jail get out of free card. That actually explains it even better, to be frank with you, Tom, for listeners. This initial one was correct me on this. Now, was this with the federal government and the state of Arizona and the counties?
I'd have to go back and look specifically where the money came from, but the contract was with a company called Rapid Trace.
I see. Tell me if these numbers sound real to you approximately, and if this is real. But I understand this whole thing we're talking about right now, we're talking 860 some odd million dollars. That's a lot of money for the state of Arizona, and specifically in Cochise County, where you are there. We're talking well over $3 million were at stake here. Is that correct?
Yes, it was $3 million for Cochise County. And this is a couple months ago, like back in August. But at the same time, Maricopa County, which is the big county where big population county where Phoenix is, they got $60 million for the same type of contact tracing. Their contract was more heavily into the whole contact tracing. And I believe that it was prior to ours.
Okay, now let's get to the real crux here. So we can connect the dots. And if you talk about the contact tracing, everybody understands what that is. There was some language in there, and I read through some of these, Tom, and it said here something about counties or whatever were going to assist the federal government, I guess it was, the United States government, for the implementation and enforcement of federal orders related to quarantine and isolation. Is that the aha moment? Is that the smoking gun here that we're worried about?
I believe so. And I have the quote here from the document. It says, number one, comply with existing and or future directives and guidance from the secretary regarding control of the spread of COVID-19. And then, regardless of the individual's home jurisdiction or appropriate public health measures. Three, assist the United States government in the implementation and enforcement of federal orders related to quarantine and isolation. So to me, it was just astounding that my colleagues were willing to agree to future directives. Doesn't say what future directives, just future directives. Wow. And then continuing, this award is contingent upon agreement by recipient to comply with existing and future guidance from the Health Human Services Secretary regarding control of the spread of COVID-19. In addition, recipient is expected to flow down these terms to any subaward to the extent applicable.
Tom, when you seen this, you were concerned, obviously. Did anybody else see this? Was there any other concerns from others? And when you brought this to the attention of others in government there, what was kind of the response?
The most important response or non-response was from my colleagues that didn't see any problem with it, I guess. So my colleagues approved this language once to accept the $3 million and twice more to disperse the $3 million.
Okay. Now, was it in your feeling, was it just the fact that they needed the money? I mean, or they didn't see any concern with this? Were they just, I'm just wondering, do you think, what's your gut tell you? Are they just being over-trusted? Do they really believe that these quarantine isolation camps could happen or not? Because I've heard references of this sort of thing out there, quite frankly. You know, it's always called the Australian plan or New Zealand. And quite frankly, I had a conversation the other day with the truckers up in Canada, with what's happening up there with the movement of the convoys. And there's stories of quarantine camps in Canada. Is that the real concern here, I'm asking, in your view?
Well, I don't want totalitarianism in any form. I'm against both socialism and fascism, and one leads to the other, in my opinion. But continuing on January 4th, one of my colleagues voted with me to turn down $1.9 million in a grant, which included language for a security agency to be provided for the health department. And so what I'm trying to do is set up the little building blocks. And then most recently, I believe it was the 25th, the discussion included equipment for the emergency services department, which I understand to be $400,000 worth of radios. But what was found by another person that studied this was that FEMA also allowed purchase, or not purchase, but receipt of military / law enforcement type gear, bulletproof vests, bulletproof shields, helmets, and so on and so forth. So when I talked to the director of emergency services during the course of this vote for or against this agenda item, she assured me that it was not going to be used for border security. So my point was that if we have two emergencies going on, one a presumed COVID emergency and the other a presumed border emergency. And these assets were not going to be used for law enforcement or border enforcement, then it follows that the most likely use for it would be for COVID response.
Okay. One other piece to this now. In October, I understand, and you, I'm sure, have more information on this, there was an executive order signed by Governor Doug Ducey there, which was called, I guess, the Enhanced Surveillance Advisory Monitoring and Preventing the Spread of COVID-19 Executive Order, which essentially gave the federal government, I guess, some sort of agreement or powers through these IGAs that we just talked about. If the governor declared a state of emergency, some of the stuff could take place. Is that the concern?
Well, the governor did declare a state of emergency already back several months ago for the border. And the and it's my understanding that there continues to be a state of emergency about COVID.
They would have carte blanche, whatever, right? I mean,
well, if somebody doesn't believe the Constitution, yes, that might be so. But I believe the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment, or correction, the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment clearly state nobody will be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So as a constitutionalist, I tell everybody, go to the Constitution first, not to case law, Amen. Not to policy, not to executive orders, not to bureaucratic policy and so on.
That's great advice. Listen, we preach that all the time here at America Out Loud. What you're speaking about right there, Tom, I totally get it. And listeners understand what you're saying. Problem is politicians and bureaucrats ignore the Constitution, clearly. Nobody's following it anymore. It's disregarded and stepped on. And that is part and parcel of the problem we're having. What's in your gut about this thing? How concerned are you and should people be? What's the real risk here?
Separation of powers is a fundamental principle on which our country was founded. And they're supposed to have a balance of power as well. So if I could go into the state of Arizona, the legislature. Now, so the legislature here is somewhat bent out of whack that the governor is the pass-through agency for all this money coming through. So let me address that, if I may. The ratio of money between the legislature and the governor is approximately 3-1. That being, let's say, about $10.8 billion that the legislature administrates versus $30 billion that the governor administrates. So before the top issue in Arizona became voter integrity, I would have said that is the number one problem with the political system in Arizona, is that imbalance of power caused by what I have referred to as the trickle-down bribery of federal grants going through the governor's office.
Yeah, perfectly said. The danger here is in the language. The language and the idea that there could be a further problem. I don't know. What do you think out there? And do you know what's happening in your state, in your area? And does Arizona become, I mean, is this really the smoking gun of this whole thing? You know, listen, we've all seen a power grab here. Let's be clear. You can't deny that. We've seen a power, no matter what your political stripe is, you've seen a power grab happen in our country. You've seen it all over the world. People, citizens everywhere are experiencing this power grab from people in power. And so that's the question that Tom Crosby pulls up is, well, I think it's a little too close to home and a little too uncomfortable, makes people uncomfortable. What about you out there? Do you feel the same way? This is remarkable what's happening here in Arizona. Could this be something further? I don't know. I mean, could it be something where there would be, like you said, an emergency order, and then what do you got, a state of emergency, and then you got quarantine camps and other things happening? I don't know. How far does the imagination go, right? I mean, those are the questions we need to ask ourselves. And big thank you here to Tom Crosby, again, Cochise County, Arizona Board of Supervisors, and distinguished career as a Border Patrol there. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and all of the going on. That was a great talk, by the way, with Colonel Tony about Russia and all. That was terrific. We'll look back at that and see what happened ahead. And Center for Immigration Studies, Andrew Arthur, right up front to the program, all that we covered there. Now, my fellow Americans, it's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Let's get over there and share the out loud truth, and we'll stay at it here. And I thank you, as always, for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.